Blog Talk Radio.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Listen to Inside the Park. Inside the Park. The RSG family. My usual suspects with me. Hot baseball topic. We're just going to jump right into it. I always come to it.
Gambling.
Say
anything about gambling.
It's
not gambling when you know you're
going to
win.
He's not coming out late. The RSG family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. Welcome back. Listen to Inside the Park, where we try to give you all we can, all the baseball knowledge we got, we like to impose onto the people. We are happy, excited to have baseball back. Got the usual suspects with me, Hank and Mike. Everybody's in tow, and we're ready to go. Hank, how you feeling today, brother?
I feel good. They can say April showers bring May flowers. If that be the case, bring on May.
That's funny. You mentioned April showers, man. I was watching a lot of ball this week. Seems like a lot of these aces were having some April showers, man. Did you happen to catch some of these, for lack of a better term, piss-poor outings that some of these starting pitchers had?
You know what? I did. You know, and in fact, I mentioned it last week, the fact that, you know, you saw both Cy Young winners from last year, R.A. Dickey and David Price, just get absolutely shelled. You know, and the sad part about that is when they come right back, it's the same thing. You know, all of a sudden you say, well, maybe it's just the early season, it's cold, they can't get kids together. But then here goes Justin Verlander. You know, he gets shelled by the Yankees. You know, and it's just going on and on and on. And it's like, you know, usually this time of the year, they say the pitching's ahead of the hitting. I don't know. Either that or these guys just took it easy this spring.
Yeah, you know, it's like we almost have to start questioning a lot of what we know about baseball. You hear pitching is always ahead of the batting. You hear, don't put any faith in spring training numbers. And I mean, over here, we you know, we do talk about small sample sizes, and we know this is the first 2 weeks of the season. But it's uncanny that you would have so many quality pitchers having tough outings. You mentioned David Price. You mentioned Verlander. Who else? We got Steven Strasburg got shelled. Mm-hmm. David Price had two bad outings, not just one. Matt Cain gave up a gang load of runs. Cole Hamels had a tough time. Roy Halladay, R.A. Dickey's had two bad outings. It's a very odd coincidence, I'll say that. Mike, are you reading anything into all these pitchers having these rough outings?
You know, I try not to read too much into first week of the season. A lot of these guys are – the first thing I would think about is the temperature, and specifically with pitching, the grip on the ball, right? And we've had an unseasonably cold spring here. I don't think guys are getting great grips on the ball. I think that's affecting movement on fastballs. It's straightening out pitches that usually had some movement. The two guys that I worry about, and I think – you know, you both brought this up a couple weeks ago. Roy Halladay, in the end, he is what he is. And that is what he did last year, what he did in spring training, he's doing right now. This may be the end of the line for him. And the other one I would worry a lot about is R.A. Dickey. That was fool's gold when he won the Cy Young. It was fool's gold when Toronto traded for him. And when you have a knuckleballer whose knuckle isn't knuckling, you got a batting practice pitcher. So, other than those two guys, I'm not concerned.
Okay.
Let me just add to the list.
R.A. Dickey, we got some concerns. How about you, Hank? Any concerns with R.A. Dickey?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that, too. I had a chance to watch R.A. Dickey, you know, while he was in the World Baseball Classic. And the thing is that was supposed to be his big niche is the fact that he throws what they call a hard knuckleball. Okay, but here's the thing about the knuckleball. The knuckleball is supposed to float and dance and dart. And if he's throwing it that hard, you know, you've got some thoroughbred hitters in the American League that's just waiting on that thing, and he's just serving it up. Now, this ain't nothing new. He's been doing this all spring. He's been getting shelled all spring. I would be concerned about R.A. Dickey because I don't know whether when the weather gets warm or anything that's going to make that thing knuckle anymore or not. But I think that, you know, Toronto, I believe, is very concerned about what they've seen, not just now in the first couple of weeks, but, you know, even the whole spring.
Yeah. And, you know, to add to that, Hank, I would put a pretty easy qualifier on this, which is if you had the opportunity to sign one of these guys or make a quality trade for any of these pitchers, are there any one of them that you wouldn't do it for? And I think Dickey and Halliday would probably be the two where you go, no, I don't really want any piece to that. But the rest of them, one bad outing, yeah, I'll take Verlander. Sure, I'll take David Price. Not a problem.
Sure. But you've got a track record with David Price. David Price won the Cy Young this year, but he was a damn good pitcher the year before that. You could say the same thing about a Verlander. You know, the warning signs were out with Roy Halladay last year. We talked about that. But you look at R.A. Dickey, he comes out the blue. And then you look at even the fact that he signed with Toronto. A lot of teams passed on R.A. Dickey, and we're talking about teams that just needed that one guy to get him over the top. They didn't want to sign him. He's a gimmick pitcher. And the thing is with a gimmick pitcher is that if you don't have anything to fall back on, that's all it becomes. It's going to be real, real interesting to watch how his year, pans out.
Yeah, you know, I'm not too concerned with R.A. Dickey. I definitely concur with you guys on the Roy Halladay situation. But you can definitely see with the knuckleball pitcher what the Mets' apprehensions were in giving Dickey that long-term deal he was seeking in New York. Now, you know, it kind of is playing out before the Blue Jays' eyes. You know, knuckleball pitchers can be up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like right now New York was playing with house money. They knew what they were doing. But
Again,
like Mike said, it is very early in the season. And it wouldn't be wise for us to count the guy out just yet. I mean, he did win a Cy Young just last year.
Yeah, but you also got to look at how he started last year, too, okay? And he came out the blue, you know. We were talking about R.A. Dickey as a Cy Young candidate at the halfway point because he just started out lights out. And he's just not doing that this year, you know. So, we just have to see. The jury's out.
And you know, a hat tip to Jonah Carey, who writes over at Grantland, who we had on the show last year. He wrote a piece on this, I think, today or yesterday. And, you know, while R.A. Dickey's bad two starts stick out because they're at the beginning of the season, so obviously we're all taking notice, he did note that last year he had two consecutive bad outings, but they happened in the middle of the year. So you don't get the worry and the, uh-oh, is R.A. Dickey done commentary when something happens mid-year versus the beginning of the year when everybody's watching.
But again, one more thing I want to add to that, too, is R.A. Dickey is coming over from the National League, okay? Now, what we have seen, you know, kind of historically, is these players coming over from the other league, trying to get themselves acclimated to what's going on. You got a very competitive East. It may not be. Now, like you said, you're absolutely right. He had a couple of bad outings last year. But now he's got some thoroughbred hitters. They're all over here in the American League. Okay, so, and it's not like he's just eking by and just had a couple of bad hitters. He's been getting shelled. So you got to look at that. And yeah, you're right, it's early. But, again, I would be real interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, well, we'll probably have to revisit that one a month or two in. Hopefully he's not going the way of Ted Lincecum.
We'll see. A lot older than Lincecum.
Indeed. All right. So, well, let's move on from one set of struggling starting pitchers you know, I've noticed we've talked a lot about the bullpens and the volatility of the bullpen, and, you know, why Mike and I sometimes don't like to or would not recommend paying a lot of money for closers. We've already seen, to my count, maybe three closers lose their job. Carlos Marmol in Chicago, Axford in Milwaukee. And I don't know if you want to count Phil Koch as a Tigers closer, but three closers have some tough outings. Jobs appear to be gone as the closer. The Tigers even doubled back and hired Jose Valverde again. Hank, are you ready to concur with Mike and I that closers may be a little volatile and that's not the best place to spend a truckload of money?
I don't concur because I don't see the Cincinnati Reds having a problem. Even though they didn't spend a truckload of money, they've got a closer. You know, I don't see, even though it's just like the spring has been a bad spring for pitchers, but I don't see the Nationals panicking at all with Seriano at the end of their bullpen. Although I see a panic move from our Detroit Tigers, who blew that call, and now they're sitting around here trying to find out who the hell's going to close games for them. Okay, Axford, the writing was on the wall for him last year, and they didn't do what they were supposed to. Marmol's the same thing. Okay, these guys was blowing saves last year. Okay, they didn't address it. I think that what you look at, you don't see the Yankees being too concerned about the end of their bullpen. There is something to be said about a quality closer. I think if anything, what you're seeing right now is that those teams that didn't address it, you know, they're scrambling. That's why Valverde is even being given a shot, because the Tigers right now, in my opinion, don't know who's going to close. And they figure, you know what, they might as well roll the dice and see what they got. You know, it's better than nothing. But you're right. I mean, these managers do not have, you know, the confidence in these guys, and it's showing right now in the second week of the season. That's the thing that strikes me.
Mike, Hank says, make a rant on these closers. Spend some money. Are you ready to come over to the dark side?
Well, here's the thing. Because of the devaluation of closers, you have guys with inferior stuff that are closing. Okay? When we put our best guys back there and they had two pitches, some of them had three pitches, some of them could have made the transition to starter very easily. In fact, there was a long trend where closers were converted starters. Dennis Eckersley, John Smoltz. You're talking about pitchers. Now you look at these guys back there that they only have one or two pitches, and if that pitch isn't working for them, you've really got a middle bullpen guy who's closing out games. So you're walking a fine line when you've got those closers back there. So I'm going to agree and disagree. If you've got a guy who has overpowering stuff, who's got a couple pitches, you know, use Chapman as an example. He didn't become a dominant closer until he could throw that off speed and that slider for strikes and get people to chase it. You know, then, yeah, throw your money at that. That's consistent. But when, you know, heck, John Axford, you know, David Weathers was a closer in this league. You know, there's a lot of guys who don't have great stuff that are closers that don't deserve to make a lot of money. So let's call talent talent, and when it's someone who's just filling a role, let's not bless them with talent that they don't have.
Let me just add this too, Mike. When you look at, you know, we look at the biggest, you know, closer free agent that was out there, okay, Soriano, Rafael Soriano. Now, the Washington Nationals already had Storen and Clifford, all right? They had two guys that could have closed for them, but they knew that, you know, they weren't comfortable with that. All right, and the thing is about it, if you are trying to win a championship, now granted, it's not for everybody. Okay, you've got to be, you must feel like you're on the precipice of a championship to do something like this. You just don't go get a closer, and you got other needs you need to address. But when you're there and you've got that opportunity and you don't take advantage of it, you know, then you don't spend the money. It's going to come back and bite you. You know, there's an opportunity like what the Giants had. You know, when they was able to have Romo close when Wilson was hurt. But, you know, if you got somebody out there, you can get them. You need to have them. The Yankees is a perfect example of that with the old man Mariano Rivera.
I think why it works in San Francisco and why it could work other places is because the Giants, when they formulated that bullpen, they paid attention to pitchers' peripherals. And by peripherals, I'm talking about strikeout rate, walk rate. Those are the important things. When Mike talks about overpowering stuff, pretty much you want a closer who can strike guys out and who's not going to walk the bases loaded. So if you're acquiring guys with high strikeout rates and control versus I'm going to get this guy because he had 40 saves last year, a la Heath Bell, who Miami picked up last year and he was disastrous. You know, had Miami been paying attention to his peripheral, it would have noticed his decreased strikeout value, the decrease in his velocity, and they probably would not have given him that large contract. So it really becomes an issue of looking at what's important. And it's not always the guy who saved 40 games one year, let's throw a bunch of money at him. You really need to look at how he saved those games. I mean,
right.
We talked about the Orioles a lot and how they won a lot of 1-1 games. A lot of that could be attributed to luck. So, you know, somebody in their bullpen may get a very nice payday because they had a whole bunch of 1-1 games, but, you know, at some point the luck's going to go the other way, and you don't want to be the team paying for that regression.
I got a perfect example for you, RJ, and the pitcher's name is Henry Rowan Gardner. Do you guys remember him?
Not at all.
No.
Oh, no. In 1992 for the Cubs, came in. He was a one-trick pony for the Cubs. He was the rookie of the year. You know, 12-year-old kid, had a little arm streak. What position did he play? He wasn't a starting pitcher, right? They put him at the end of the bullpen behind Gary Busey. And as soon as that one pitch was gone, he was done. So, you know, sometimes movies are a reflection of real life. And even the movies understand that if you're a one-trick pony, you can close. So Henry Rowan Gardner, I think, is really the example we need to be following here.
What movie was this?
Rookie of the Year.
Of the Year. Now, he done pulled out one of them good ones. See, now, if I'd have said that, all of a sudden, I'd have been 112 years old.
he got
us looking up the Rolodex and stuff. Then he said Rookie of the Year. And I'm saying, I don't remember no damn rookie name.
No,
name.
He could have passed as a movie that nobody saw but him. He could have completely made that name up and we wouldn't know.
That's right.
Just a minute, RJ. You were looking up his war right now. Gosh. I don't know that? Shoosh. Well, I tell you, Henry wasn't signed because he could throw the curve. He was signed because he could wheel back and throw the fastball. And that was it. And when that was gone, he retired.
Well,
yeah,
that's a little of the movie with the kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His out pitch was an underhanded changeup. Remember that?
Yep, yep. It was his mom's pitch. It was nice.
Guys, I can see us losing listeners by the second talking about this movie.
Hey,
oh, that
you know, brought
that
to you
basic.
By Mike.
Are we done with Henry Rowan Gardner?
Well, when it's true, it's true, okay?
All right, well, let's stay with some struggling talent. Josh Hamilton went back to Texas this past weekend, and I was a bit troubled by some of his comments following his rough weekend. He pretty much told the media that he was hurt by all the bullying. It felt bad. And it probably affected his play. Hank, you were a big proponent of this Hamilton signing by the Angels. If you're an Angels fan, how are you feeling hearing your star come out with these words?
I'm a little bit disturbed. No, I'm bad. I changed that. I'm a lot disturbed. I mean, what do you mean you were hurt? You know? I mean, I don't want to hear that you hurt. Go out there and play ball. We done signed you all this money for you to play for us. Give a damn about you being hurt because the Texas fans booed you. You were supposed to hit the ball up in the stands and gave them the, you know, Texas high one. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, I would be really upset if I was an Angels fan with that. I'm like, I don't want to hear that. If you felt that way, you should have signed with them. You know, I wouldn't like that.
Now, Mike, would it have been okay with you if he was hurt, but he played well?
Did Hank just say the high hard one? I did I miss that? Is that correct?
No,
high
you didn't.
Hard one?
I heard high hard one.
Huh?
Okay.
Oh, sorry. But what should I should have said? The one finger Texas salute. That sound better?
I like it. I do like it. So this is a perfect example of there is too much media. Okay, baseball players. You know, they're put on this earth to play baseball. They are not quote machines. They are not rocket scientists. They are not emotional stalwarts. I could give two blanks how Josh Hamilton feels. He signed a 5-year, $125 million contract.
Man.
I don't care. Play, right? Play. And that's the end of it. So, you know, and what did he say was horrible? No, but in the end, if you put a microphone in front of an idiot, he's going to say idiot things sometimes. So, to me, it's a waste of breath. In the end, we should be talking about, is Josh Hamilton worth 5 years and $125 million in general? And the answer is no. The fact that the Angels had money burning through their pocket, they wanted to make a splash, is the reason why they signed him. 3 years into this, they're not going to be able to give away his contract. And we knew it before. So why should we be surprised because he's emotionally soft?
Well, I'm not saying surprised, but, I mean, listen, I agree 100%. I don't look to ball players to try to explain Newton's theory to me by any means. But it does concern me when a guy, I mean, hell, if Brandon Phillips came out and said, yeah, the booing kind of got to me, and he had an 0-for-4 day where he struck out 3 times. I mean.
All right, so but let's. Let's be honest, Josh Hamilton's normal line stat for this week has been about 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. Believe me, he opened up against the Reds, and he didn't get a hit. So that's just who Josh Hamilton is. Look at his stats from the second half of the year last year. That was his stat line. That's who Josh Hamilton is. He's upset, and he's bad. So it's like a double whammy, I think.
Let me also add, too, that, you know, Josh Hamilton, you know, he has a tendency to just lack focus, and I think we've seen that. You know, the fact that, you know, the last time we saw Josh Hamilton, the Texas Rangers had an opportunity to win a division. He drops a fly ball, and then they go on and they lose a one-game playoff to the Orioles. And then next thing you know, he's signing with the Angels. So, you know, he didn't really endear himself to the Texas fans. You know, the last part of his career with that team. You would think that, you know, part of him, you know, leaving and going to the Angels would be to, you know what, I'm going to prove that I, you know, am a better player or a better athlete than you gave me credit for. And for him to come out and lay an egg the way he did and then come out with those statements, I think that the psyche of him, of a Josh Hamilton, it's got to be somewhat troubling to the, you know, Angels organization. At least it would be to me if I signed him to all that money.
Okay, so I'm taking a vote here. Would you, Hank and Mike, blame his slow start to him being too sensitive about how the fans are treating him and or him worried about living up to this large contract he got and impressing his new fans in L.A., Mike?
No. And first of all, good congratulations to Josh Hamilton on getting someone to pay you $25 million a year. I don't spite that man at all. Congratulations. Have fun spending it. No, his stats are down because his stats are down. He hasn't been a quality hitter in 4 months worth of baseball. So what expected us to turn him back on right away? He's struggling. He's got some issues with his timing, and that's the main thing. The emotions come because of that. Those are an offshoot of that. Those aren't the cause. You know, that is a symptom of his problem not hitting, means that his emotions come out because he's frustrated. But if he was hitting, I don't think we would be talking about the emotionally unstable Josh Hamilton. We'd be talking about the wonderful comeback story, guy who's held it all together. So if one gets fixed, the other's going to be fine.
What about you, Hank?
No, I don't absolutely believe. I think that's all just Josh Hamilton being Josh Hamilton. You know, let's look at Josh Hamilton when he first signed his contract through spring training and now to the start of the season. he hasn't really been raising a whole lot of hell since he's been with the Angels, okay? Now, we go all the way back to last year when he started to have his swoon after the All-Star break, all right? This is I'm with Mike. This is just Josh Hamilton. I think the fact that he just used it as an excuse to kind of deflect the fact that he has not lived up to that contract in the early part of this season, you know? And, you know, when you spend $25 million on a ball player, and they have the history that Josh Hamilton has, you know, there's probably some rumblings around that clubhouse. I can't confirm or deny that, but you got to remember, he's not Albert Pujols, okay? He hasn't led a team to a championship. In fact, he's floundered. So this is the thing that they're looking at, and I know it has nothing to do, in my opinion, with the Texas. That should be a memory to him.
Well, if I roll back my mental Rolodex, you were a fan of the Josh Hamilton signing, were you not, Hank?
I was. I was a fan of it because this is what I thought. I truly thought, and he duped me too. But, you know, I put myself in the eyes of an Angels fan. Okay, maybe this guy is having some problems with Wash, you know, with Washington, the manager. Maybe he's got some problems, you know, with Nolan Ryan. And he doesn't feel comfortable there, even though he spent a lot of his career there. Maybe this is a fresh start. He does not have to be the man because you've got the machine there. And I'll look for him to really flourish in that environment. And he hasn't done it. What he's basically done is been the same player. The consistency that he's had has been the same player he was when he was with Texas. So, yeah, I'm disappointed in Josh Hamilton and what he's done, too. You're absolutely right.
2 weeks in, and he's cooked, huh? He's cutting bait.
I think you don't cut bait. You got 25 million reasons not to cut bait, but you have to be concerned. Okay, like I said, this is not Albert Pujols coming over from another league. Okay, you're in the same division. You've seen these same pitchers. Okay, and you're struggling mightily. So I would be very concerned because you're looking for him to flourish. You think that the new environment would really get him going, and he's just not doing it. And you have to ask yourself, will he ever? And you know, and will he be consistent to it? Can he do it for a whole season, or does the injury bug once again crop up on him, or does he go into some sort of emotional relapse? We don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna ask for 100% honesty from the board here. Quick question: Did any of you guys pick the Angels to win that division?
I can't remember. I know. I think I picked the Rangers.
I picked the Rangers, but I picked the Angels to make the playoffs.
Okay, then I want to. Mike, do you have in the playoffs as well?
I think I did.
I did not, but I want to throw this question to you guys because you guys obviously had them in a better light than I did. Jared Weaver got hurt. He threw a pitch, fell on his elbow. Fractured his elbow. He'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. His rotation now is C.J. Wilson and a bunch of other guys. Are you a bit worried about where the Angels are headed now that Jared Weaver will be out 4 to 6 weeks? I'll throw it to you first, Mike.
Well, if their offensive players play like they can, the Yankees been winning with that pitching lineup for a long time. So can Anaheim. But If Hamilton doesn't hit, if Pujols doesn't stay hot, if Trout isn't Trout, if you know Trumbo doesn't stand up, they're going to have to change how they go about things. They're going to have to be winning games 7-6, you know, 8-6, and can't really count on that pitching anymore. So I don't think this is a horrible thing. You figure this team played 500 ball for pretty much the entire year last year and were relevant until the final week. So as long as Weaver comes back in a couple weeks, I think he's got a six-week stint right now, non-pitching shoulder, non-pitching elbow, they should be okay. So they just got to stay close, stick around 500.
Okay. Hey, how you feel about your Angels in the playoff pick?
Well, let me tell you, I would be lying if I didn't tell you I was concerned, only because you look at that Angels pitching staff. Okay, now you don't have Jared Weaver to really anchor that down. You have Josh Hamilton acting this way. We don't know if that's going to be a distraction or there's enough leadership in that clubhouse to squash some of that foolishness that he's doing. On top of that, the Oakland A's are—they're proving early in the season that last year wasn't a fluke. Okay, I didn't anticipate that. You know, I didn't anticipate. Even though I did pick Bob Melvin as the manager of the year for that team, for that league, for that division, but they've jumped out to a 6-2 start. If they continue to play the way they're playing, it's going to be tough on the Angels, you know, without Jared Weaver. They need somebody to support the pitching staff. So, yeah, I'm concerned.
Okay. A nice, honest answer from Hank. I like it.
How about that? New year.
We're rubbing off on you yet, brother. All right. I can dig it. What do we got? This may be a first for Inside the Park. I want to get you all's opinion on the Houston Astros. I don't know how often we talk about Houston, but it's the first time for everything. So I want to do that, and I want to delve into how they're building this team and you all get you all's thoughts on that. But before I do that, let's take a quick commercial break.
Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
All right. Houston Astros. I was riding in the car listening to Sirius Radio, and the guys on the MLB Network were talking about the Houston Astros and how they're building this team. I'll give the listeners, for those of you who are unaware, a bit of background here. The Astros got a new general manager. He is, for lack of a better term, a sabermetric general manager. He pays attention to stats. He pays attention to the numbers. He also pays attention to scouting. And he's trying to combine all that and form a team that can compete statistically and or compete in the field. So a lot of the people that he's hired have been well-respected sabermetricians. He's going about building this team the sabermetric way, so to speak. In order to do that, he is right now focused. Houston has been pretty bad for some time, for quite some time, and the reason being is they have not drafted very well. So a lot of the players that they've drafted in the past have not made it to the big leagues, thus setting their team back quite some time. So what they're doing now is they're playing a lot of the young guys. They called up a lot of guys from the minors, some guys who weren't getting as much playing time because they were younger, but on the team are now getting a chance to play. Houston's theory is we're going to see what kind of talent we have now so that we know in the future when we are a little better who we need to keep, who we need to get rid of. In doing that, they did not sign a lot of the free agents, the sexy free agents. They didn't sign any real free agent veterans to 2 or 3 year deals. Reason being is free agents A tend to be very expensive, and they saw no point in spending a lot of money on free agents if the team was going to be bad. Really, there's no difference between them winning 70 games and 75 games, or 60 games and 70 games. When the focus is on young talent and getting a higher draft pick, you're really only hurting yourself with those extra 5 wins. So their theory is, let's see what we have, and we'll get better through the draft and by giving the young guys that we have some experience. I think I encapsulated everything. Mike or Hank, is there anything that I missed there?
Oh, you got it.
Okay. So when I'm listening to the radio, one old school guy, I think it was safe to say he did not really subscribe to the sabermetric way, thought that this was a disservice to the fans in Houston. He saw the benefit in having a 75-win team versus a 70-win team. So he doesn't really understand what Houston is doing. He was very upset and almost said that I think his words were he'd rather poke his eyes out than watch the Astros play. I think we've all been fans of teams that have been losers. So I wanted to get you all's perspective, first of all, on what Houston is doing. See how you guys feel about the plan, and then we'll delve into it a little deeper to see, you know, if the shoe is on the other foot, how would you feel? But just throwing this out there to you first, Mike, what are your thoughts on this plan that Houston is implementing?
Well, I think there's a couple ways to look at it, right? And the thing that sticks out in my mind is that baseball is two things, right? Baseball is entertainment, and baseball is a business, okay? And that's the juxtaposition that we're in. And when entertainment is high, business is good. And when entertainment value is low, business is low, okay? Now, if you're a startup company starting a business, their philosophy makes perfect sense, okay? You don't make long-term investments that aren't going to pay off, that aren't going to be there with you when you go. But when you tie in national television contracts, local television contracts, you got to fill a stadium for 81 games. Unlike the NFL, which has so much demand, you got to fill the stadium, 10 times, including preseason? You've got to fill it 81 times a year. You're doing a disservice because what you're doing is putting a product on the field that is non-entertaining, and therefore fans will find other things to do with their time. They will find other passions, other places to go, and there's no guarantee that they're coming back when you're ready. So that's my first point. The second point that I kind of have an issue with is that there's no guarantee that the players on the field are the ones that are going to be the guys that turn it around for the Astros. Okay, what they have is a group of kids that are prospects. They got a AAA team. Okay, so by not signing a couple veterans to lead up that team, you've really what's the right way to put this? Okay, I'll make a parallel for me. So I'm a Cincinnati basketball fan, and when Huggins left, they lost all their players. They lost everybody. So they were recruiting from JC schools, from anybody that would come and play, and they played them, okay? And they said, these are the futures guys. We're going to get these guys a chance to play. In the end, what you found out is, yeah, they played freshmen, but they played freshmen who didn't have any talent because when they were seniors, they still didn't have any talent. So I don't think the Astros are doing anybody a service here. This is entertainment along with a business. You can't ignore one side of it. And if you just take a step back, and I tell you that right now it is very possible if the Astros wanted to spend a little money to have a lineup with Lance Berkman, Hunter Pence, Michael Bourne, and Jose Altuve filled in with whoever else you want to sign, you'd go, that's an all right team. That's an all right team. May not be a World Series team, but that's a lineup I pay to see. Those are all Houston Astros that are no longer there.
Okay, and Hank, we're going to let you jump in, but let me ask Mike a couple of questions, follow-ups. You said mainly it's entertainment, and they got to fill these seats. But can we agree that to fill those seats, you need a winner?
You need a good story. You need something to capture the fans' attention. Winning is the easiest way to do that. What baseball lost years ago is the identity of players with the town and the city. Because players in free agency move around so much, there's no more the lovable Cubs aren't so lovable because you don't have a guy on the roster for more than 3 years unless the name is Alfonso Soriano. So you can't – you lose that, okay? And I'm telling you as a fan of Cincinnati that one of the best baseball towns in the country, okay, in the country, because they put a substandard product out there for over – almost 15 years, now that they have a great team out there, it's taken them 2, 3, 4 years to get fans back in that should have been there the whole time. because they didn't put a product on the field that people wanted to see.
Okay. So understanding that winning typically is what fills the seat, this is why I'm not totally against what Houston is doing. I mean, you said they could have signed Lance Berkman. They could have signed Michael Bourne, Kevin Euclid. But theoretically speaking, if you sign those guys, what, Lance Berkman, you're only going to sign him for a year. So he'd be done after this year. Kevin Euclid, 2 years, top. Michael Bourne, he got a 4-year deal. But Houston is in a division with the Angels, with the Rangers, and with Oakland. They're not going to be ready to compete for a division title in 2 years. They probably won't be ready to compete until 2015. And the way that they're going to compete is with young talent and drafting well. So if they're okay, if they're marginal with those quality name free agents that you mentioned, they're only hurting their draft abilities because, as we all know, if you win more, you draft higher. You lose more, you get an earlier draft pick. So that's the way that Houston is going to compete, is through the draft. It's just like what Toronto did. They're in the division with the Yankees, with Tampa Bay and Boston. They weren't going to be able to compete. And then they waited until this year where everybody looked like they were weak. They looked like it looked like Boston could be had. It looked like New York can be had. And then they struck gold with those free agents. I think in this day and age, when there's so much money with these larger markets, that's the way to compete. You strike on the free agents when you're on the cusp of winning, not when you're searching for an identity or searching for a team.
Yeah, you know, I just have two things here. One, I agree with you. If you have a great farm system, the ability to draft a good general manager, that can set you up for a lot of success. Tampa Bay is the perfect example of that. But with a team that doesn't have any track record for that, Kansas City is closer to the role model, right? With a team that's been bad for a long time and just now starting to get players up there that still haven't yet produced. But the second thing I would want to point out is this is kind of self-imposed. Houston willingly went to the American League, and they left the NL Central when they competed with perennial mid-market teams with, you know, Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, even St. Louis to a certain extent, were not blockbuster spending teams. And the Cubs, they couldn't pick anyone to spend money on properly anyway. They could have survived in that division and been competitive with an $80 million payroll. But by going to the American League West, with you're exactly correct, Anaheim and Texas, with two of the largest television contracts in the league, they've put themselves in a position where they're not going to be good consistently in that division until they get that type of television contract money and they're willing to spend it. So this was short-term gain to go to the American League, but I think strategy-wise, it's going to set them up for failure for a long time.
Yeah, and to that point, they have a new owner, and I think part of the stipulation to him becoming owner was he had to agree to move to the AL before Buttsy would let him buy. And I also think that he got a little bit of money for agreeing to move over, if I'm not mistaken. So I think whoever was going to be the owner had to agree to that switch. But Hank, why don't you jump in here and let us know how you feel about the Houston Astros and the plan.
I can't, you know, what they're doing right now makes sense for right now because they're not going to compete. I think when you go to the American League West, you are already, you know, and as bad as this team has been, you've got the A's, you've got the Angels, you've got the Rangers, you've got the Mariners that's going to compete some this year. They're not going to do anything. So that's just a way of telling their fans, look, we're going to be bad for another 2 or 3 years. Now, having said that, there is a danger. You know, and I know the sabermetrics has become all the rage now in baseball, but there is a danger about going strictly on numbers with baseball players. If you go strictly on numbers, you don't have a Marco Scudero in San Francisco. You've got somebody better than a Pablo Sandoval in San Francisco because their numbers don't pan out. You got a player like a Delmon Young who's junk in the regular season,
but he's amazing in the playoffs. You know, that's the only thing about going sabermetrics when you start talking about trying to build a team. You have to have an eyeball test to see if these guys can just flat out play. And that's my concern about saying, well, we're just going to be a 69-70 win team or less until we get guys up here ready to go. It's not fair to the fans. You know, when you got the fans in Houston right now, they're probably more excited about seeing the Anaheims and the Texases and the Oakland A's coming through there, you know, especially if they can score 16 runs on the Mariners, you know, then it's fun for them. But coming into the American League and just being just god-awful, you know, it's not fun being a fan. And, RJ, you know, we went through this a few years ago here in Detroit, you know, where that team was fighting to break a losing record. And it was hard to watch. And we were told the same thing. We're going to build from our farm system and everything, and this guy is doing this. And that does not necessarily pan out when they get to the show. So there's got to be a balance, in my opinion. If you're going to do this, you know, it's very rare that you're going to have any team out there that just has, you know, 9 thoroughbreds, you know, that they've gotten from their farm system. I think, you know, you look at what Tampa's done, you look at what, but, you know, those aren't the norms. You look at what the Oakland's done, that's not the norm. You know, that's an exception to the rule. So, you know, if I'm a fan right now, I'm excited to see these other teams in the American League, but going on, I'm going to get pretty damn tired of losing every time I come out to the ballpark.
Okay. Mike, how would you feel if you were a fan of the Astros? I mean, would you understand? Or I mean, we touched on the Yankees last week and how we thought they need a youth movement, and it might be time to trade some of their older talent, but as a fan, do you understand the need to get younger, or are you like, look, I want to win, and I don't care how you do it, just figure it out? When all of that's not really a fair way to look at it, because, I mean, what could you really do at this point to become a winner? Not much of anything. So where are you on that, Mike?
First of all, they dug their own hole, okay? Bad decisions. Of all the players that I talked about that they didn't sign, they traded, and the prospects that they had for those guys didn't pan out, you know, or left as free agents, one or two. So there was bad decisions there. In the end, okay, so baseball ownership and baseball, they deal with loyalty, okay? You grew up an Astros fan. You were a fan of the Killer Bees, Biggio, Berkman, and Bagwell, those three together. Mike Scott pitching in the 86 series, Jose Can You See Cruz with the high Sox, you know, playing shortstop for him in the 80s as well, J.R. Richards, and you keep that. So, you know, when owners say we're going young because we screwed up, they don't lower prices. They don't give away free hot dogs on Tuesday and say, hey, guys, we know we screwed up. No. They get you for everything you got and expect you to stay because guess what? You're a loyal fan. I know you like it. So as a fan, do I understand? Yeah, logically I understand it. Yes, you got to get younger. You got to do that. As a fan who understands the economics of baseball and says, listen, Houston is, I believe, the fourth largest market in the United States as far as baseball goes. And if that's the case, there is no reason in the world for the fourth largest television market to have one of the league's lowest payroll or the second lowest payroll. There's no reason in the world for it. There's no reason in the world that they couldn't have been supplementing with mid-tier free agents, maybe one big free agent, and build up through the draft as well. This is poor management. The only reason that they have any type of success right now, business-wise, is because the major leagues have propped them up and because of loyalty. And you can only deal with fan loyalty for so long before they say, guess what? I guess I like the Rangers now. And so I have very little patience for that. If you live in Kansas City, you have to have patience for that. It's a small market. In Houston, there's no reason. No reason. People should have lost their jobs, which they did. They should be gone. And Houston should have to fight back for every fan that they pissed off because they deserve what they get.
Probably you're getting angry and angry as the clock ticks.
Think about it. The fourth largest market. We're going to go young with the youth movement and not spend any money. Gosh, I wish I had that owner. Oh, wait, we had Carl Lindner. So, yeah, we had him. Those owners stink. They're horrible because at the same time they want to make their money, they expect you to come watch whatever they put on the field because it puts on the cap that you root for. And fans like the three of us who root for the front of the jersey and not the back of the jersey have to saddle up and take that because we relate to our youth. We relate to our lives, our parents, people that are here and gone because of the baseball teams we watched growing up with them, not the product on the field. Do you still pay for Jean-Claude Van Damme movies? No, because he's 60 years old and he can't do it anymore. It's not worth your time and money. Yet, you'll go out and watch a Tigers team 10 years from now who may lose 100 games because you're a Tiger fan. And they gotcha. So I think it's despicable what they did to those fans, to that fan base, and the product they put on the field is it's just not fair.
Breach. About the new owners, these current owners?
Well, it's probably the new owners have – so let me tell you. So when the new Reds ownership came in, I can't believe I can't remember his name, he bought it from Carl Lindner, who was the Chiquita Banana guy, okay? And he was so tight with his money, and the new ownership came in, and they've been fantastic. They said, listen, our expectation here is to win. We're going to do it the right way. We understand we have limited budget. We're going to bring in the people we can. We're going to keep our talent, and we're going to put a winning product on that field as soon as possible. That's our goal right now. They didn't bottom out. They didn't let everybody leave and do it. They were clear. They had good expectations with the fans. But when you tell the fans, guess what? We screwed up. We came in. We're going to make a lot of money, and you're going to take the medicine for it? I don't have patience for it.
Okay. But the new owners, what they're doing is basically saying, hey, we don't know what we have at third base, so rather than signing Kevin Youkilis, we're going to play Matt Dominguez to see if he's any good and to see if he'll be around in 2015 when we're any good. Are you not on board with that theory either?
I'm on board with it, but you still sign Kevin Youkilis because you got to sell jerseys. And what if Matt Dominguez doesn't work out? You got to have some name recognition there. You got to have some people who can play. Kevin Youkilis cost, what, $10 million this year? Didn't cost very much. I'm not a fan of Kevin Youkilis. No, it doesn't make a lot of sense realistically. But
if you sign Youkilis, you got to pay him, play him.
Let me say this, though. I think that, you know, Mike makes a valid point, though. You're coming over. This is a new start for the Astros. You're in the American League. Nobody's expecting. I don't think the fans of Houston, if I'm a Houston fan, I'm not expecting you to win the division. We know what we have as a team. But you know what? It shows that I want to go see somebody. I want to go see somebody that can compete in the American League West. Now, you're right. You don't have your $80 million payroll. Yeah, you could afford a Kevin Youkilis. But guess what? Kevin Youkilis becomes the star right now for the Houston Astros. That's the guy who you break the face while you're building this team. You know, it's very difficult to watch a bunch of no-names play ball. RJ, we were just here. You know, as much as we wanted to watch the Tigers play and everything, that team several years ago, you know, when Ramon Santiago was a rookie, you know, that team was very difficult to watch. And we didn't know anybody. We didn't know anybody. The season was over by June, and it was not fun to watch. And there was nobody you could tie yourself to. So, you know, Mike makes a valid point. I hadn't even thought about that. Bravo, Mike. I think that they owe their fans a little bit better than that.
Yeah, and you know what, RJ? Let me bring up an example you use. You like Moneyball, right? You love that movie, didn't you?
I teared up at the end. That was great.
But in that movie, there was no guarantee that was going to work. They needed a face to the organization. They brought David Justice in, and I love Brad Pitt's line in this. He says, listen, Dave, we didn't bring you in to be David Justice from 10 years ago. You're not that guy anymore. You can't do it. We came in for you to come in here and do what you can and be part of our organization. He was the face. He was an old star that came in there, but they needed that. And Houston is missing that aspect, that you need some sort of entertainment value, some sort of name recognition, so your fans can still buy in. They can still go buy a jersey that they know is going to be in the league, or at least was in the league, you know? Nothing worse than buying that jersey guy that gets released the next year. You're like, okay.
So is what you're saying, you're not a Carlos Peña fan?
what I'm saying is, if you're going to go cheap, you need to at least bring in some sugar, okay? Even if it's fool's gold, you got to bring in a little bit of sugar.
You're not buying.
It could have been Roger Clemens. They could have signed Roger Clemens to pitch every 8 days, and the fans would have been happy.
Now you're talking.
Yeah. Have some fun with it.
Poor Carlos Pena, though. He's not selling any jerseys, huh?
I don't think he is. I don't think he is. But, you know.
Hey, he's a former Tiger. You're not buying a Carlos Pena jersey?
When Carlos Pena was a Detroit Tiger, I didn't even know who the hell Carlos Pena was. You know better. You know, it was Bobby Higginson back there. Let you know how bad it was. I wonder how many of those jerseys are still around.
Hopefully not.
There you go.
All right, we got about 4 minutes left. Hank, is there anything that we didn't get to touch on that really has you going thus far in the season?
You know what? We didn't, you know, as far as the season, it's just been, you know, it's fun to have baseball back. At some point, though, during this year, I do want to talk about the Hall of Fame and the Hall of Fame voting. You know, it has stuck in my craw that nobody got elected to the Hall of Fame this year. You know, and baseball's got to do something. That whole situation there and that whole steroid era, it's just not right for some ball players that we watch to have just stellar careers, and then they're put on hold, and then a sport as great as baseball can't find a ball player to put into their Hall of Fame with all those great ball players out there. I thought that whole voting this year was a travesty.
Okay. Well, next week we'll dig into that. Maybe you'll bless us with your Hall of Fame ballot. Mike, anything in the first week that's caught your eye?
I still really dislike the Cardinals. I just like to get that out there.
Pujols is gone. Tony Roos is gone. You still hating, huh?
It's Molina now. With the passion. It's absolutely Molina.
Oh, Yadi, and that's it. Yadi's got is the object of your ridicule.
He is. His face comes up on the CBS Sports line when you're watching online, and I just, it's like he's mocking me right there on the screen.
Yeah,
he's mocking me, and then he hits the ball, and Shin Shu Chin can't quite catch it and squeeze it and two-run score, and he's laughing right on the screen, and I can't deal
with
that.
Now you're hitting on something. We got 2 minutes left, but I got to ask you. With Ludwig out in Cincinnati, so you don't have a left fielder, right?
Who is a left fielder.
And they move Heisley to left field, right?
Yeah, well, Heisey was their fourth outfielder, and he can play really any of the outfield positions. He played a lot of left field last year. In fact, the original platoon last year was Heisey and Ludwig. So
right.
why not move
to left and play Heisey in center?
So here's the reason behind it.
Give it to me in 60 seconds.
Oh, got it. So Chu has been working his butt off in center field the entire spring training, okay? He did not work left field at all. He did not play left field when he was in Cleveland. He played right field. So to make him, you know, move him over to left and move Heisey over to right or to center, or even move Jay Bruce to center, just makes two weakness positions. The balls that he made mistakes on in that Cardinals game, he was in position. He just didn't close the glove. So, you know, I'm not ready to throw that out. The Reds made a decision to trade bat for glove. They did that. I'm happy with that. Drew Stubbs would have caught all those balls, but Drew Stubbs, let's be honest, is hitting 4 for 25. He's got 4 for 21 with 9 strikeouts, okay? The worst OBP in the league of any leadoff position, the Reds. This year, Chu's on base over 500. I'll take it every time.
Stubbs is going to Stubbs. That's it for another week of Inside the Park. As usual, if you've missed any weeks, please go check us out on iTunes. You can look us up under Real Sports Guys, and then you'll see the whole catalog for Inside the Park. Thanks for tuning in. Come back with us next week at the same time, 9:30, 8:00. And, Hank, take us home.
That's the ball game, folks. Drive home safe.
Peace.